Mrs. Lambert, real one. When and where were you born, Mrs. Lambert?
I was born in Hackney, just west of London, and I was obviously given away because I was adopted when I was a year old. I was adopted by a lady called Mrs. Douglas Hamilton, and she adopted 12 of us. And we used to live in Letchworth, in, not quite sure, but they could show whatever it is in Letchworth. And when we got older, of course, we all went to school at St. Christopher's.
Before we go further, what was your date of birth?
28th of May 1918. So we went to school at St. Christopher's, and Mrs. Douglas Hamilton was one of the governors. She fell out with the governorship and moved us all to another school called French and Heights, which is near Farnham in Surrey. And we all went there, and I was there till I was about 10, 11, something like that.
What were your adopted parents? What were they like?
Well, she was just the money maker, and she provided everything for us, but we were actually looked after by a lady called Mrs. Davis, and we used to call her David. And I didn't realise until I was about 11 years old that she was coloured. And even when she had, while we were there in Letchworth, she used to have friends over, and there were Indian people in saris, beautiful saris. And I didn't know about black and white then. They were just lovely people because they were so colourful. One of the adopted boys was coloured as well, but it didn't come into our history at all. Until I went to another school.
Was she a moneyed lady? She was looking
yes,
up at
12. She was one of the WDNH Jones people, family.
So your home must have been quite a large house.
Well, it was built for us, I think, because it was certainly it was L-shaped, and I never went into the other L-shape, even as a child, so I don't really remember that bit, but my bit was a huge dining room with, at the very end, was a playroom. Lots and lots of toys, of course. And a rocking horse. Oh, it was lovely. A little dapple grey rocking horse. And then upstairs, of course, the necessary bedrooms. There were five boys and seven girls.
So it'd be comfortable upbringing.
Very, yes.
A loving one? Or the
very loving, yes. I had a lovely childhood, I really did. I think I was a loner, I still am. But it was still a good, in fact, I've enjoyed my life. I can't honestly remember being totally unhappy just once in a while, which I'll tell you about later on. But yes, it was a happy childhood. And then, as I say, we moved to Frensham Heights, which was a wonderful school. Really, in fact, last June I went down to the 75th anniversary because we were the first people there.
What did you particularly like about school life?
Oh, everything. Do you know anything about Montessori? Well, she was, we didn't actually meet her, but our upbringing was Montessori when we were children, which means that everything a child needs is there. Use it. And so we did use it. And I've got in one of my talks, I tell them about this one wonderful school that I went to. We had a workshop, which was separate from the school, and it was weaving, tapestry, pottery, woodwork, leatherwork, everything. And we didn't actually have to go with leatherwork to do anything. We did what we wanted. And it was just free, and it was a wonderful school. I'll never forget it. And although I wasn't sad when I left, because I was so used to being shifted around from one place to another, I look back with regret that I didn't actually stay there for all my schooling. Because when I was about 10 or 11, I went to a little school in St. Leonard's near Hastings, 2 years. And then I went to the biggest school in Tunbridge Wells, called Hampton House. But I enjoyed my childhood very much. And I've always wanted to be a nurse. So when I left school, I went to the Royal Sussex County Hospital in Hastings. Lasted there for about 18 months and had to give up for my health. Then I went to Malmesbury in Wiltshire, because by this time our family was scattered. It wasn't in a family life anymore. We were all scattered, and I went, when I left the hospital, I went to a school in Wiltshire, children's school in Wiltshire, Now, when I was at Frensham, it was a question, Frensham House, it was a question of where to send the children on holiday. And one girl who was 5 months younger than me later on in life, says not to tell a long, long story, we used to call each other sisters. And another girl, we used to go to this lovely place up in Staffordshire. And she did love Staffordshire, and it was absolutely wonderful, I loved it there. It was the home of the Wedgwood family, but they didn't live there anymore, and they bought it as a school. So during the term time, it was a school, and then the holidays, it was a holiday home. And this is where we used to go for our holidays. And in the summer, we'd all get on the bus and go along to Wales, Forth in Wales, not where I grew up with, had a house there, and we used to have like a summer holiday.
Did you see much of, again, with the parents that adopted you, the people that adopted you?
I died when I was 6 years old.
So what happened then? Who was looking after you then when she died?
We had a guardian. Her name was called Miss Bradshaw. And she obviously must have been a friend of the Douglas Hamiltons, because she was a guardian. In fact, we used to call her Guardian. It was the name we had to call her. She lived in London, 16 Warwick Square, which is now Six Flags, would you believe? we lived there, so when I ended term, I used to go back to London, left all my school things. And then, I must have been a loner for everybody, because I never ever went on holiday, except when I went up, occasionally went up to Staffordshire. I never ever went on holiday with any of the girls and boys. She always used to send me off to different people every holiday, and that's what I used to hate, because I didn't know them, they didn't know me. Sometimes I got on with them. There was one horrendous family I went to, which I'll never forget, and I was always being sent off to different places, but it made me a very independent person, because I always had to go on a train on my own. And this was what happened to start doing this, I suppose, when I was about 10 or 11, so I was obviously quite self-sufficient. And so, of course, that stopped when I left school.
Just before we go further on that, she took 12 children, this lady.
Yes.
Was it orphans that she went for? She provided a accommodation home for orphans.
Yes. All of them were. But we don't know where they came from. Because it's the most peculiar thing that I was born in Hackney in London, and a year later, here I was up in Letchworth, and I cannot find out how I got there. And I cannot find out anything about myself in that first year.
So your parents, your own blood parents, you know nothing about, yeah? You don't know them,
yeah? I've got a birth certificate, yes.
But you've never, you obviously can't remember them at all.
No. But it's most peculiar. I don't know how I got up there. Because, I was born in 1918, so 1919 I was shipped off to this family. And there's no record of any adoptions before 1925, they started recording adoptions, so I can't find it, but never mind, it doesn't bother me.
But you've intimated, really, that you got on with your peers in the family situation.
Yes, and we had some lovely people to look after us, really did, lovely. They were very good disciplinarians, they weren't nasty or anything like that, but I must have had a good ground in life, because sort of followed me through life.
Did the church play a role in your life?
Not really, although yes, it was always there. The church was always there. Even up to when I left school, the church was always there. I remember at Christmas, because we used to have lovely Christmas presents, of course. I mean, we didn't realise that we were lucky. It's a way of life, it's something you accept. And I don't miss my parents, because what we've ever had to miss. But I do remember her saying to me one day, put me up in her lap, so I must have been quite small. And she said, why didn't you call me Mummy? Because the others did, you see. I didn't realise I didn't call her Mummy. But I mean, it could have been any name. I called her Mummy because it was a name, but it didn't mean anything until years later. And I've always called her Mummy since, even now. Because I had to write a dissertation about the French and Heights. I'd been there the year before, and they said, will you tell us about your early life, which you did? But as I say, she died when I was six, and then we had Garvey. So it was a good life. The only two things I really agreed to, and that was going back on holiday to people. But I didn't, when I was there, I didn't think, oh God, another one. I was too young, looking back on it. Yeah. But it was completely enjoyed.
But within the family group, the dozen of you that were in that group, you lived a normal childhood, in
effect. Yes. When we were at Letchworth, we were all in the same house. But when we went to French and Hertz in their farm Rowledge, we weren't a group family anymore. We were children in boarding school.
And you adjusted to that obviously quite well.
Well, yes, very well, because it's a way of life. I mean, this is, do this, we did it.
Join anything like the Girl Guides or?
Oh yes. Yes I did. When I was at Tunbridge Road, Morton House, I was too. Oh, wait a minute. No, it was before that. I went to school after St Christopher's. I went to school at, as I said, in St Leonard's. Yes, and I joined the Girl Guides there. I was thrilled to be a brownie.
Did you enjoy that?
I did.
What yes, particularly did you like about it?
It was community, it was friends, because in a way, we lost the community feeling when we left Letchworth because we were all in the same house. And then when we went to Frensham Heights, we were all scattered. Mm-hmm. We weren't a sort of close-knit family anymore. And being the Girl Guides, you were the same people all the time. And it was a nice feeling looking back on it. I didn't think of it at the time. But I think that's why I enjoyed it, because we were in a kind of family, you see, with the Girl Guides. And then when I went to Hamilton House in Tunbridge Wells, I was a Girl Guide again.
What particular lesson did the Girl Guides teach you?
Oh, everything that they can teach you. It's all in the promise, promise to be. Friendly, watching out for people, courteous, kind, obedient, smiling, thrifty, and all that kind of thing, you know. There's a little rhyme that goes with them. Courteous, kind, obedient, smiling, thrifty. I've forgotten it. But there are 10 or 12 promises you make, and they made it into a rhyme so that you can remember it. But yes, I did enjoy that, and eventually became, stopped me biting my nails, because every time I bit my nails, it was a point off for the patrol. That was on the Primrose Patrol. Yes, that was nice, because we used to go out on, at Hamilton House, we used to go out on, so weekends were tents and
camping.
Big tents and all camping. Yeah. It's good. I enjoyed that too. It was community. I like being amongst people, and I still do it. I'm doing now. So I like being amongst people. I can make friends easily, and you get response from friends.
The uniform that you issued in those days, is it similar to today?
No, not really. No, it's different. It was just a dark blue. Dress with the patrol thing here and your badges on it. I've got all the badges. Well, all the first aid badges anyway.
And you'd have to purchase that yourself, presumably.
Yes, yes. Do you know, it wasn't until I left school that I actually had, in fact, till I left school that I actually had money in my pocket. I used to have pocket money, but not anything, you know, if you go shopping, somebody else paid for it. I had violin lessons at the French and Heights. I learned to play violin and the piano. And I must have been very good because I can remember music's been music with me all my life now. And in the French and Heights, there was an organ in the lounge. And unfortunately, they had to sell it because the prices were going up and everything was going down. But they let me play the organ when I was in about 10.
You'd be sheltered from the harder times of life. I think 1926 strikes and the hard times after that.
We didn't, yes, but I knew it was going on because I remember with being in London, living in London, because my mummy lived in London, Queensgate Gardens, I suppose. And I can remember of going to the theatre and things like that, and it was time of the Jerry Marches. And I can remember all these miners sitting on the pavements with their hats out and putting money in the thing.
Did that make an impression with you?
Not really. I knew it was happening, but it was a sort of passing impression because I didn't know what it, I didn't know there were things there even. I didn't know why they were there.
And you're
I
very young.
I just knew that there were people there who were out of work. I did know that. But I didn't know the whys and wherefores. No, nobody ever mentioned that. But I do remember them being there, yes. And
you said that when you left school at 14, you went into nursing.
No, 17, 18 I left school.
18, sorry. Yeah. Then you went into to nursing. Yeah. Had you any education qualifications by 18?
No, just schooling. I took what was then called a school certificate. I could speak French because one of the lecturers, one of the people that looked afterwards was French, and it was Auntie Jambi. Very small she was, and always wanted to be as tall as her because I was little and very young. And she was French, and I just picked it up like that. All children should learn two languages when they're babies. It really does work. They're talking about in the school now about starting at 7, too late. Because they used to think I was a French girl, because I always spoke French. But when I went to the next school, they didn't speak French as such. And I've got not all of it, some of it I can still speak French, but not like I used to. And then the town house I learned German. I still played the violin. But when I went to the school in St. Leonard's, I left French and Heights, and I played the violin and the piano, and I wasn't given a choice. I wasn't allowed to play both. You made me play the violin, and I loved the piano.
Was it a pretty sheltered life? You didn't come into contact with, shall I say, working class children in...
But we were aware of them, yeah. Because at Christmas, whenever we had our presents, I was going to say that before, when we had our birthday Christmas presents, we always had to choose one present that we would give away. And we went to church and we put it under the Christmas tree, and that was good training. So we were aware of people. But we were. I was looking back on it, I think I was aware of it, like the lady of the manor giving away the Christmas boxes, which is very bad, isn't it, when you think about it now. But that's how it was then.
But it was instilling a responsibility into you, wasn't it?
Yes.
For people who were not so well off and not so, were always a handicap. Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't really register because I didn't know I was well off. Didn't come into it. I went to boarding school till I was 18.
What was life like there in boarding school for you?
Sheltered. No boys, just girls.
You've probably given me the name. What was the name of the boarding school?
Well, French and Heights first, and then St. Leonard's, and then Hamilton House and Kingsford.
The fact that you didn't know your parents in a boarding house situation, was that a handicap? Were you bullied in any way, either verbally or physically?
Never thought about it. In fact, to such a point now, I don't mind telling people I've been adopted. It doesn't bother me one bit. There was a time during the war when I thought I must go and see my parents, but I got the address. Couldn't do it.
Can we talk about a little while about boarding house life for a child? Boarding school, sorry. Boarding school life for a child. What are your memories of it? The actual memories of being in a boarding school and living the life of a boarding school child.
Well, I can't compare it to anything else because I've never known the other. But to me, it was a sheltered life. It was routine. A child loves routine. You did the same things every week. You knew what was coming up. It was safe. I had no money worries, because I never had any. I didn't even think I was special. I was very shy. I was very shy, I think, because when we were at Frensham Heights, we were part of the family, and the world was my oyster. I loved that school. But when I left there, there was no family. I was on my own, and I became very shy. I used to play hockey. Tennis. I finished up in both the hockey teams and the tennis teams. We played for the Junior West Kent hockey team. Remember that?
And the education itself, was it a high standard?
It stayed with me all the time.
Discipline in the boarding school, what was that like?
Good, yes, it was there all the time.
But not harsher?
No. We learned to get on with people. Which I think is really very good, because you have to get on with a larger crowd of people when you're in a day school, but, with the schools just now, comprehensive, etc., you only see your peers when you're walking home, your holidays. When you're in the school there, everybody's around you, but you've got your friends. But when you're in boarding school, everybody's your friend. And if you don't get on with somebody, tough. You learn to. But I think it makes you more tolerant.
Bullying, did that appear in the boarding school?
No. In fact, there were prefects and sub-prefects. I was a sub-prefect, but I was not a girl. I never got to be a prefect. music. I once played one joyous day with the violin. I don't know if you remember the name. Weldon, he's a conductor. Who's a conductor? And he came down to Temple Hill with the orchestra to do a recital. I was allowed to play at the back of the second fiddle. Wow. I can remember that.
Girls being educated just after the First World War and the between the two wars, was it a restricted education because you were girls? Or had it widened by that time?
Oh, I think we started, as I can remember, my historical education started with the Romans. It went all the way through until I left school for Queen Victoria. No, it must have been before that, because I don't remember much about the Georges. It must have been a bit scrappy. Geography I loved. Biology I was excellent at. Very good, high marks. Arithmetic I learned in later years. Algebra I simply loved. I could do anything with algebra. It was a resource to 100% of the time. Geometry I didn't see the point of. Grammar, I thought, well, that's useless. I still don't know what past participle is. What else? Literature, I was good at that because I'm a writer, I can write. I'm not a writer as such, but I can write. Yes, I loved all the subjects. And then there was tennis, hockey, sports a lot, and spare time. It was awesome.
What were your feelings coming to the end of your education, knowing you're going out into the wide world and you didn't have a base then? Presumably to go out into, in the sense of having a home to go out into.
Well, yes, we were in Warwick Square, but you can't really call that a home because he was always sending me off somewhere.
So were you looking forward to getting out on your own and your own life?
No, because I was going into nursing and that was another safe place. Everywhere. In fact, if you think about it, from the day I was born until almost the day I was married, and I'd been through nursing and all the other things and the wife's thinking, and the WVS when I went overseas, it was someone telling me what to do all the time. So although I was independent, I wasn't, as you might call it, independent worldwise, whatever. And it wasn't until I got married that I picked up the strings. I said, hey, what am I doing here? Get so sorted. And I ruled the family. I did.
Can we look at your nursing experience now? What were the initial steps? You've left school and you've applied for a nursing, not a nursing post, but to go into a nursing career. What were the steps that you had to take to get into that?
I had to go to St George's Hospital up by Marble Arch and write a set paper for an exam. And it was a double, because I'd had a good education. And I was accepted. And then I went down to Brighton. And I was there, I think, for about 18 months, something like that, when my health let me down. But it was very good, because it's not like, I don't know what they do nowadays, but we went into the ward, and I remember the first thing I had to do, I'll never forget it. Right, go and get the bedpans for the patients. Now, I've never picked up a bedpan in my life before, and I guess what they were like, because I think I must have maybe come in contact with one when I was younger. And I had these, and I didn't even know how it should happen. Nobody came and told me, they just said, go and get them. So I got the bedpans, and I had two in this hand and one in this hand, and I stood at the entrance of the ward, and I stood like this, what do I do next? So I just said, do you want one? Do you want one? And I said, all right, tell me when you're finished. taught me how to make a bed. But once a month was it, or maybe was it one day a week? It must have been one day a week. We used to go to Sister Cuta, and she had a class there where we had our rooms, bedrooms and things. And she looked after us too, because my feet were killing me, so she put blocks at the end of my bed and all that kind of thing. And she did look after us. It's only young girls, let me say. It's not like nowadays, not your wise in this world.
And you start at the bottom, as you say, bedpans, and learn the job that came up.
Yes.
And you, as you've mentioned, lectures, and presumably there would be some testing at some point.
Yes, I remember the first test we had to take was what do you put on your trolley when you're giving a patient a bath? Simple as that. And then we sort of go on from there. And in those days, we didn't have ward maids. The youngest nurse was the ward maid. Sweeping, cleaning, quality.
Very physical job, very physical work.
It was later on, of course, when we'd been there for a while, I thought that shift. And at one time, across the road from the hospital was the eye hospital. And I did a stint in there. And me, poor little girl, I wasn't even a registered nurse or anybody that knew all too much about it. At that time, I was there on my own. And it was just extraordinary. There was a sister, but I think she went to bed. And I had all, in the morning I had to give these patients their eye drops and their ear drops and their little whatever into the hospital. Oh, and the night before I had to get ready for breakfast. You had to put the porridge on. It was in the days when you had to cook the porridge overnight. I put the porridge on the stove and get that cooked overnight. And then in the morning put a pan of milk on so that the water was hot. And you could always tell when it boiled over because you could smell it in the wards. I did that a few times, I can tell you. I had a porridge of burnt milk.
But very strict disciplinary atmosphere, isn't it?
Yes, very strict. To such a point that I remember I broke a thermometer once and I had to go in front of the matron, petrified the matron. We all were, we really were absolutely petrified. And I had to go and see her breaking the thermometer. I need to be careful. But in the end, as I said, my health let me down, so I had to leave and I cried my eyes out.